Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hayden, and I'm working at...
An Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage, as parents, for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
Welcome, everybody. Chuck Bonneville, Julie Hayden, the Chuck and Julie Grassroots Show, True Straight Up.
That's right. Show brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture, and Chinese Medicine. A lot to talk about today. The fires, what happens when you have Democrats in control of things, not only in California, but here in Denver. But I want to start off with Cheryl Tumley. She's a columnist and author, the author of a great book, God Given or Bust, Defeating Marxism and Saving America with Biblical Truths. And she has a great column up in the Washington Times right now, basically a sort of a cautionary tale as the anti-mega forces are off and running with Trump's election. So, Cheryl, hey, welcome back to the show. We're glad to have you. Thank you.
Hello,
for
Cheryl.
Hey, Happy New Year. It's always great to be with you guys.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you, too. Well, so I wanted to talk, you talk about Biden is banning things. You know, Trump gets elected, hooray, but Biden, meanwhile, is banning everything that he can to screw Trump up. You've got anti-mega forces. I was reading a thing on X. Everybody's now blaming Donald Trump for what he might do that'll make the California fires even worse. I mean, it never ends, does it?
No, it doesn't. And look, we just came off of watching Kamala Harris certify the ballots, right? And it had to, just put yourself in her shoes. I'm no fan of hers, but it had to have been very uncomfortable and awkward for her to do that. And I thought she did it with grace and dignity, right? I mean, you have to give credit where credit's due on that. But that whole feel-good thing is just, it's a mirage, because you have to remember, the Democrats hate MAGA, and there are many in the Republican Party who do as well. And already the anti-MAGA narratives and chants are starting, and Joe Biden just did, you know, the monster one of all by signing a couple of executive orders that set off limits to offshore drilling, 334 million acres on the East Coast, millions more acres on the West Coast, out of the Gulf of Mexico, soon to be renamed Gulf of America, right? but it just, this just ties the hands of Donald Trump as he enters the White House.
Well, and you've got Mershon now saying he wants to sentence Donald Trump, even though it's pointless. So the lawfare continues. You've got Merrick Garland appealing to go ahead and allow the Jack Smith report, which was, we won't even go into all the problems with that, to be released. And you're right. On the one hand, they say, oh, look at us. We're so great. Peaceful transfer of power. And yet they're doing everything they can to screw over the Trump administration yet again before they even get into place, right?
Yeah, they're like that pesky little younger sibling who constantly, like, pokes fingers into your back at the dinner table and pretends, you know, to the parents that not doing anything at all, everything's good here. And really, the biggest fight that we see brewing from the Democrat Party right now is on the borders. You have Democrats in areas that they control in states and jurisdictions, sanctuary jurisdictions, already claiming that they will go to jail if need be, you know, in order to preserve the sanctuary status of those jurisdictions. So you can see that the deport narrative and agenda of the incoming Donald Trump administration is already going to hit walls in those areas.
Oh, well, welcome to Denver.
Well, there's one thing that's absolutely true, and Joe Biden can't really prevent it, is that whatever you can grant by executive order, you can revoke by executive order. And that's really the basic law thing. So he can make all his monuments, he can make all of his no drilling, and Donald Trump will revoke those ones. And I guess, as all things, it'll go to courts. But, you know, they can spend all their time chewing it. The problem for Trump is that he is going to take over in a few days a federal government composed of around 4 million people. And I imagine 3,999,998 of them hate Trump. So it's interesting heading over an organization in which all, or virtually all, of the employees don't like Trump and don't like MAGA. So it'll be an interesting time corralling and getting them. I'm not sure you want them to do anything other than trying to get rid of them, but you know they'll be at their keyboards waiting to gum up the works until Trump can get rid of them all.
So you raise a very important and interesting point about the executive orders, right? They're supposed what one president does, the next president can undo, and that is in fact what happened with Donald Trump to Joe Biden, right? Joe Biden went on an executive order signing spree to undo everything Donald Trump did during his first couple of days in office. But at the same time, some of these executive orders have deeper claws than others. For instance, Barack Obama signed executive orders that Donald Trump had a hard time undoing because some of the things, and you did mention this, some of the things end up in court. Once an executive order is signed, then those who back the agenda of that executive order swing into high gear to defend and protect it against an unwinding by the next administration. And on something having to do with the environment, we have some well-funded, far-leftist environmental lobbyists in America who are probably ready at their arms right now to drag Donald Trump into court should he, on day one, as he promised, sign to overturn Biden's offshore drilling ban.
Yeah.
But
What do you make?
they're going to have a tough time. Well, it depends on what court they get into. But
That's it.
once Trump is in there, and the most important thing, he controls to the purse strings. And they've come up with this great new theory, I think, that you said, and they do here in Denver too. You get all the money you can out, even if it's too early, and then you set up NGOs, and then you set up contracts between the NGO or a union and the government, which purports to last pass the Trump administration. But he's gonna have to blow past all of those roadblocks. And there's one thing about Donald Trump is it's
Mind him.
doesn't mind blowing by everything. And I think and at least he has a team now, not composed of traitors and backstabbers or everything else, but it'll help him think through, because he does need trouble. He does need to think through all of their actions. And then all actions above and beyond on his side. Now, you can't just be playing defense against the Gulag state, but you have to go after the Gulag state.
Can I just make one quick point, Julie? I know you've been trying to say something, but I just want to say something that rarely gets brought up. The whole idea of executive orders, right? We've gone down this path in this country for a very long time now, I would say since Bill Clinton, where instead of going through Congress, right, which is the duly elected body of government that's supposed to bring forth legislation based on the people's will, based on constitutional provisions, and then it only gets to the president's desk to sign it or to boot it back to Congress, right? Now we're at the point Congress is very cowardly and they don't want to take a stand on anything. So everything is done by executive order now. Or if Congress determines that they can't do something like the climate change provisions, the new Green Deal, they leave it for the president to piecemeal in. And this is a dangerous time in America
Yes.
when you have presidents acting like kings. I don't like it when Barack Obama, Joe Biden do executive orders, but honestly, I don't like when Republicans do either. I want to get back to the time when Congress was the one to make the laws.
No, that's a good point.
Well,
Let me ask you
unfortunately,
about
that'd be nice, but that's not going to happen. You can't have a government that has, and the Republicans and the usual idiocy has things like filibuster rules, where a majority of people can't do what they want to do, because you'll have a government that's just ever frozen. And so whether the
Because I think
Republicans
Congress
ought
sometimes
to,
doesn't.
well, let me finish, whether they ought to go through executive order, they have no choice. It's a new modern world. And it's if they're going to blow through things, they're just going to have to do it, and they're going to have to be strong about it.
Well, that's
Well, and
sort of, oh, go
go
ahead.
ahead, Joe.
That's sort of the same argument that many conservatives have made, and it's a pragmatic argument, right? but about Election Day. It used to be Election Day was Election Day, and that was it. The ballots were counted, and Election Day ended, and we knew who won, except in very unusual circumstances. Now it's gotten to the point where it's mail-in balloting. It's basically phone-in balloting almost, and the counts go on and on and on. And instead of making the case that we need to get back to Election Day and paper ballots and that's it, Republicans have sort of thrown in and thrown in the white towel and said, okay, you win, Democrats. Now we just want to beat you at your own system. And so I get what you're saying, that that's the pragmatic argument to make. But at the same time, at what point do we give up so much of the principle of proper government that we become more like Democrats, just better at fighting?
Yeah. Well, you have to become... You do have to. If we in Colorado had more than our share of intellectually challenged Republicans, who all demanded that on Election Day we all go to the ballot box and vote. We don't vote before Election Day. You know, we have to keep it up voting for Election Day. That was comical. It was comical because then they just took the ballots away. They gum up the machines. They do everything else. You've got to, it's I think a good analogy. If they adopt the 3-point rule in basketball, you can't ignore it. You can't say, well, we're not going to play that game. Now, once you get power, you can go back to one-day voting. They should not agree to wanting to have mail-in ballots. They should want to get rid of them all.
Get the power first.
Yeah, but if all you do is sit in your corner and lose, because you can't figure out how to play by their crooked rules, well, all you're going to do is lose. And this time, Colorado did go out and did do some ballot harvesting and didn't have everybody go to the polls the same day. And they managed to win congressional races and some state house races. I mean, they have to be smarter than the average bear, or the Democratic donkey will keep on kicking you till you're dead.
And now Republicans have the power, right? We have clean sweeps in Congress. So let's see what Trump will do to taking us back down a constitutional path or bringing us even farther down a path of tyrannical governance.
Let me throw in a question, too, back to sort of the anti-MAGA, the MAGA thing. I want to get your thoughts on big tech. I find it interesting that Elon Musk has clearly thrown in with Donald Trump. Now you've got Mark Zuckerberg, miraculously coming to his senses and saying that they're going to end all the fact checking. And he's donating to Trump's inauguration. Jeff Bezos has signed a $40 million deal with Melania to make a documentary. I mean, you've got all of these big tech people coming in. And I think, I mean, I have my suspicions as to why. It's to benefit themselves financially with AI.
That can't be it, Julie. That cannot be it.
Cheryl, how much do you, and that's good, right? But on the one hand, what Mark Zuckerberg giveth, he can take away. What Elon Musk giveth, he can take away. How do you weigh in? How do you feel, when you talk about MAGA, now, you've got to go forward and you've got to be careful going forward. How do you weigh in the whole big tech thing of that?
Well, I weigh in with my book, God Given or Bust. Right. The new book I wrote was based on answering just that question. Look, we can go back and forth in the political world, right? Have our wins, have our losses, have our enormous wins once again, which we're seeing right now. We're seeing a lot of wins with politics, with big tech, right? For whatever the reasons, people are coming over to the side of freedom. But what happens when the pendulum swings back the other way and we have all these leftist Democrats in charge again? You really think Mark Zuckerberg is going to stand as strong on freedom on his Meta site and Meta company as he does now? I don't. And Jeff Bezos, right, failing to endorse Kamala Harris as the owner of the Washington Post and throwing $40 million toward Melania, who was hated, right? Hated by the left during her first administration. So this is all politics at play. And the answer is the larger battle in America is not so much over who wins in politics. It's putting God at the helm of our country. because the big war in America is God-given individual rights versus government-granted rights. And we've been waging this battle without even recognizing it or naming it for some time now, and government has been winning. Just look at under COVID, all the God-given individual rights we had just stripped and seized by government, and most Americans being okay with that, thinking, oh, that's the rightful role of government to protect us from a virus. And so really, if we want the answer to big tech, all of a sudden drifting our way and politicians all of a sudden speaking constitutional rights and things like that, that's all well and good, but that's not the long-term solution for America's freedom. The long-term solution is to get back to God and fight for God-given rights and individual liberties to put the collectivists and the Marxists at stops in their tracks.
You know, that's a really good point. Jeff Bezos and Mark Zuckerberg, they're not doing us any favors. It's like you said, free speech. That's a God-given right, right? That's something we have. It's our right. It's not like that. That's a really good way to put it. They didn't just suddenly, Mark Zuckerberg, become like the Lord of free speech and say, I grant America's free speech now. It's like, no, we already had that. And you're right. We got to remember that and to remember how quickly and how easily they took it away from us, and how, I mean, to me anymore, I'm like, you can't give an inch on that kind of thing. I don't think anymore. It's like you said, you have to stand up and say, no, this is my right. You don't have any right to take it from me. I think people are woken up or awake enough to do that now. What do you think?
I hope so, but I think it's too easy for people to forget, right? Yeah. Because it's an attitude, and it used to be just inherent among Americans of all political walks, right? Even Democrats loved America, and they recognized that our rights, our individualism was something that set us apart from other nations and made us the best country in the world, and they didn't dare so openly seize individual liberties because they knew that most Americans wouldn't put up with it because we all just sort of breathed out freedom. We knew that these were our birthrights. Well, we've forgotten that. So now it becomes something that you have to purposely put in your mind, like you just did, Julie, right? You said, you made the connection, but that used to be something that nobody ever doubted before. And so these nefarious forces that wanted to steal our rights wouldn't dare raise up to try and steal our rights because they knew they wouldn't get so far. They wouldn't get anywhere with the fight. We have to get back to the time where it's just inherent. It's just part and parcel of breathing.
Right. Well, and I think that concerns me too. You know, you look at the schools, and I'm glad we have an eighth grader, and I think all the stuff they've gone through, I think have made them very in their own way, sort of patriots, right? But you look at college campuses where, you know, they don't think, like even on CNN, right? They're like, well, we shouldn't have free speech on Facebook because it could be detrimental. It's like, where did that come from? And I think that's one of the reasons when you talk about God-given rights that the left attacks families so much, because I think that's where that whole belief in the your attitude about God starts. And if you can have the government telling you, you know, forget about God, we're going to tell you what to do, then it's pretty easy to take over again.
It is. And if you don't recognize the signs of the theft of freedom happening at the beginning, it sort of seeps its way into society and becomes the norm, right? Yeah. And so then if suddenly you waken up to the idea, hey, I don't have this individual right anymore, you're sort of that voice in the wild out there where everybody else has already accepted that it's something that government's allowed to give or take. Just look at the battles over the Second Amendment, for crying out loud, right?
Right.
I mean, we're always going to court. The conservative side is always going to court and insist that we deserve to have this weapon or carry a magazine, own a magazine with X amount of capacity in it and so forth, when it has to be the other way around. It should be all the rights for gun ownership belong to the individual, and the government has to go to court all the time and prove why we should not have those rights. That's how it works with a nation of citizens who understand their rights come from God. It's just inherent, and it's incumbent then on government to make the case why they must cede those rights.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. Well, listen, Cheryl, we have to, Chuck, did you have any other questions? Because it's kind of, we have to get going here.
Well, Cheryl, what actions do you want to see Trump take to restore constitutional-based government.
Well, he's got to deal with the border. Everything that he said about the border, deport, 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 the narratives that he's putting in place right now that are already having an effect on Mexico. Mexico is actually busily working to stop caravans from reaching the U.S. border because they're afraid of Trump's 25% tariff vow and so forth. The border is the number one thing, and I'm on board with everything that he's saying about instilling a safe and secure border. And second, I want him to take actions to make America the number one on the world stage again. China has been allowed to run roughshod over America for way too many years under Republican watch, too, as well. The Republicans aren't innocent here. So we need to fight the China threat. And I think Trump has some ideas and agendas that could do just that.
Well, what do you think about the visa controversy that seems to split MAGA between Elon Musk and others versus Steve Bannon and other ones? Which side of that fight do you fall?
So this is only an issue because the border has been porous for so long, right? These visas, I'm actually on the side of Elon Trump on this, though I wouldn't go so far as he did to call those who disagree with him nasty names or anything like that. But these visas, it used to be we would encourage those with talents America needs to compete with success on the world stage, to come to America. And we would encourage these talented individuals to come to America from their country by opening the doors and granting them visas to come and work in this country. That's great for America. You bring in the best and the brightest. It's only become an issue now, I think, because people are so sick of hearing about how illegals help America. They do the jobs that Americans won't do, that some on the conservative side aren't remembering the days when borders were mostly sealed and we actually encouraged just these people, these talented people, to come in and help our businesses grow and thrive and compete on the world stage.
Well, do you care at all about our kids and their education and their ability to get jobs? I mean, how about the companies that took their American workers and told them they had to figure out how to get their replacements all in, or they wouldn't get anything, any kind of severance? Is it just the Indian universities take over our universities and our kids are to hell with them? They're not working class, and so they are to be sacrificed for the globalist agenda.
Now, of course, I care about our upcoming generations, but I see that as an issue of education reform, right? We've had public education in this country for 50 years now that has been on the downslide, largely because of the teachers' unions have been empowered to use and exploit students for political gain in the Democrat Party, right? It's like this the circle of funding, the unions collect from the teachers, and then the unions give to the Democrats, and the Democrats
give to the
you know, fight for the teachers in the political world, and the kids get lost in the mix. So, you know, education reform is definitely something I care about. It just has to be done first by dealing with the teachers' unions and the socialist agenda.
That doesn't help the kid who's graduating from Caltech at the top of his class and can't get a job because they want them to be employed in Silicon Valley at cheaper wages in competition with India graduates. That doesn't help that kid or that family or that future Americans.
I don't have an answer for that, to be
honest. Well, I think you're, I'll weigh in on this. I think that it's kind of, both of you, as always, I'm the nice person.
As always, Julie. Is it everybody?
Both of your
right,
point. I think, Cheryl, I mean, what you're hitting at is the whole immigration system has become so screwed up that none of it makes sense anymore. And it's all corrupt, right? And that's true with the visa thing. I think clearly there need to be reforms. And I think there can be, like you said, go back to a place where we had a balance, where if we could bring somebody in and people in who are going to help the United States, great, and not harm them. And I think it can all be done. I think it's just all gotten corrupt. But listen, we have to let you go. Out on that, I have solved all the world's problems. No,
hey, Shel,
where I've always liked to ask this for you guys because you're so generous with your time. Where can people find your book, read your column, find out more about you?
So you can get my book anywhere. It comes out officially on the 14th. It's available now on Amazon, and all the bookstores have it right now. Thank you for that.
Oh, thank you for that, too.
Thanks so much
for coming
on.
Thank you for your time, and Happy New Year to you, too.
Yeah, take care.
Happy New Year, guys. Bye.
Thanks. All right, Cheryl Chumley there. Washington Times column up right now. Her book is God Given or Bust, Defeating Marxism and Saving America with Biblical Truths. But let me, Chuck, I'll kind of tackle that argument. I mean, I think that both sides on this, on the high tech visas thing, there was a time, I think, when it maybe worked. And I think right now it has become corrupt. Like you said, there's something wrong if you're an American college graduate and you're being forced to train, you know, somebody from another country to take your job, and then they're forced to work for lower wages and all of that. That's screwed up. But I think that there's also value in going back to an immigration system where, where people can come in and the whole thing helps make America, frankly, greater. You see what I mean? I mean, would you disagree with that?
Yes.
Then you would be wrong and I'm going to mute you. No.
Yeah.
Well, no, I would also say
Americans,
this.
American universities have to change. One of the things that have to happen is there have to be jobs out there. And they say, well, there's no Americans can fill these jobs because they have made no attempt to say, you know, these jobs are available to you.
They told Americans you can work from home and we'll give you money and you don't have to ever come into the office
you encourage, you know, and at a certain percent, yeah, sure, top 1% or something.
Right.
But companies don't want just the top 1%. They want all their workers to work cheaper. It doesn't matter if they have degrees or they're just farm workers.
Right.
They're always going to be driving down the wages, driving down the one. And either you're for the American worker, and the American workers include somebody who spent all his time at college working hard to get the degree. That's American worker as much as anything else. So we're either an employment place for the world, in which case, you know, there is no point for education in the United States, but we care about our kids, we care about our families. We care about something more than trying to make Bill Gates and Jeff Zuckerberg and all the rest of them can get cheap workers.
Nope, I agree with you on that. Here we've got Sherry on line one. Hey, Sherry, thank you for calling in. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. I wanted to weigh into what Chuck is talking about.
Sure.
I listened to a speech by Vivek, the guy who was running against Trump.
Oh, Vivek Ramaswamy. Uh-huh.
Yeah, thank you. Yes. And I really liked what he said, because he said that the economic issue should not be the predominant issue on immigration. The number one issue should be national security. You need to look at who's coming in, where they're coming in, you know, what group's coming in. But number two was that they understand what America's about, just like your lady that was talking. Our Constitution and our Bill of Rights and inalienable rights are about, and you should bring in people that actually want to embrace what America's about, because not everybody does.
Correct.
And, so maybe those wouldn't be the people, and maybe economics shouldn't be the first issue.
Yeah. No, that's a good point. I mean, from their point of view, the people hiring, I think it in a way, it's no different than Americans for Prosperity to a certain extent. They just want cheap labor.
That's exactly right. That's what Americans for Prosperity. They don't care about the braceros coming across the Rio Grande to work on orange fields. They care about high tech jobs.
No, and Sherry, and you're right. I think we need to get back to a place where if you come in anymore under the Democrats, it's like you come into the country and you're encouraged to, I mean, look what's going on in Europe. If it's even worse there, right? To where they're having grooming gangs, raping young girls. And somehow we can't talk about that because it's not sensitive enough, right? And you're right. I think it is important that when people come in, they need to embrace the American culture, not work against it. So, hey, thank you. And thank you for calling. Appreciate it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So, Chuck, you wanted to talk about, we want to get to the fires because we want to talk about the overhaul. You know, this is what happens with Democrat policies. But you wanted to talk a little bit about Argentina.
Yeah, I mean, it's the most important story, I think, of the year. And the year is only a couple of weeks old. But Milei, the prime minister of Argentina, or president, came into Argentina with a radical agenda. He came in with an Austrian economics. We're going to cut all these government jobs. We are not going to print money. We're going to adopt the U.S. dollar, and therefore we can't print money. Therefore, you can't spend more than the dollars you have. And he's kind of a crazy guy, crazy hair, was a rock band guy, very bright.
And he had the chain. Is this the time for the chainsaw video?
Bring out the chainsaw, Julie.
All right. He like made his point politically with a chainsaw. So, Doug, if we could please play the Argentina chainsaw video. He's waving the chainsaw around in the crowd. Jared Polis recently stole that and pretended to chainsaw a bunch of Colorado regulations. Fortunately, though, Jared Polis was wearing safety goggles when he did it. This
did
guy
you get
wasn't.
The chainsaw where he's chaining, sawing agencies off of the board?
Yeah. No, I don't have that video. No.
Oh, okay. Well, so he has another video. It's more. He goes to each of they're like 30 ministries, and he takes a chainsaw to a strip that represented each industry. And he said, okay, the ministry for women's sports and youth, the ministry for fishery, and just blew them off the board. It was hilarious. It was just wonderful. The problem is everyone has always assumed a drastic cut in government will result in severe hardship, because basically you're taking all these people who had jobs, firing them, getting rid of them, and they're going into an economy that has no place for them. Eventually, all of this would work out as the jobs would kind of come back to the private sector, but it'd be an enormous amount of pain and awful. Milei said, you know, screw all that. I'm cutting them all out. And Argentina had 30% a month inflation and no growth, but he actually got rid of entire departments of education, everything else. And the shock this week to find out the Argentine economy has responded incredibly positively. At first, there's an increase in the poverty rate, but pretty soon the inflation went down, the economy grew. I mean, if there's ever been a demonstration of free market, because you never know. I mean, okay,
right.
Does free
you talk
market
about, right.
work? I mean, you know, or does communism work? I mean, never before has someone actually done what he did. And the shock to everybody, including economists, is it's working. And that ought to be, they bring Milei up to Doge, you know, give him a Doge position, and start just getting rid of entire departments.
Give them all chainsaws.
Yeah,
real ones, not
chainsaws.
Like Jared Polis' chainsaw.
You know, we don't want to, I mean, he didn't say we got to get rid of waste and inefficiency. And no, I said, we're just going to get rid of them.
We're just going to cut
what they're doing.
We don't need them. We don't need them. Well, here's some Leo. You probably can't use a two-stroke chainsaw in California anymore. That's
right.
There's nowhere to plug it in because there's no electricity. And just real quick, a comment from Jim. HB1 visa should be time limited, so recipients would have to get a citizenship within a time frame, 2 years. That's a good point. You know, and I think what you're saying then, Chuck, is, you know, there's always this debate is, you know, conservatives say get, you know, smaller government. Democrats say, no, we need bigger government. And the question is, what happens when you actually do make the government smaller? And you're saying
I mean,
Argentina.
That's happened. Making government smaller. The only time government gets smaller has been during revolutions where they
overthrow
the prior government and kill or get rid of all the bureaucrats. And then they start building up their own bureaucracy. But there's been no one where, at least I know of, they said, okay, you know, this thing has gotten too big. We're going to cut it by 20%.
And not only that, but it worked. I mean, the people weren't, you know, the economy didn't collapse. Everything didn't go south. And it worked. Well, and I think to kind of compare that, again, you look at Democrat policies, and now I want to turn to California a little bit. This is, I mean, talk about Democrat policies crashing and burning. Every time you turn on anything, the internet, TV, anything, you see these horrific wildfires in California that are essentially burning down all around LA, right? And it is entirely the result of Democrat policies, right? Water management policies, fire management policies. I've covered many forest fires in my time as a reporter. And this reminds me, although it's way worse, if remember years ago, there was a huge forest fire right on the edge of Colorado Springs, right? And it was the same thing. When you build homes in what is called the fire red zone, you got to do something to, I mean, forest fires are a part of nature. You can't stop them forever. And this is what happens. So if you're going to do that, you have to have policies that match. And under Gavin Newsom, what Trump is tweeting today, that Newsom tanked a water deal that would have provided millions and millions and millions of gallons of water to save some extinct fish, right? And that's what's happening. The mayor of LA is in Ghana, right?
Going to the inauguration of the new Ghana.
Of the new Ghana president, because like that's important, right?
You won't be going to Washington, by the way, for our make America Ghana again. And they're already doing it.
You're looking at, I mean, this is what happens with Democrat policies in real time when things kind of build up, and then it reaches literally an exploding point. There's an interesting, we're going to play a soundbite here. This is a developer, Rick Caruso, who apparently ran against Karen Bass, the current mayor, who was backed by Obama, by the way, who is in Ghana. And he's a real estate developer. And he says, hey, this is totally the government's fault. Doug, if we could please play the LA fire soundbite.
My heart goes out, obviously, to the people with their homes, and I'm watching the small businesses around us go up in flames. This is people's livelihoods, so it's devastating. But what is most concerning to me is our first responders and our firefighters who are trying to battle this, there's no water in the Palisades. There's no water coming out of the fire hydrants. This is an absolute mismanagement by the city. Not the firefighters' fault, but it's by the city. And I'm going to be very honest. We've got a mayor that's out of the country, and we've got a city that's burning, and there's no resources to put out fires. So if you look at your pictures, you don't see the firefighters there because there's nothing they can do. And it looks like we're in a third world country here.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a lot of tough questions that we need to ask the mayor and the city council and our representatives and the county representatives. Why didn't you work to mitigate this? What was your brush mitigation program? I heard you earlier talking about it's been dry because there hasn't been rain. That's not the biggest problem here. The brush up in these hills that are controlled by the city and the county, I would bet you that if they haven't been handled, mitigated, pruned, removed for probably 30 or 40 years. This was a disaster waiting to happen. And what's predictable is preventable. And who's paying the price are all of these people in their homes and their businesses tonight. Now, we'll rebuild. But the majority of this community is going to have a tough time rebuilding their lives.
I mean, that's what we need to worry about, right? Female firefighters, the entire like coastline is burning because of mismanagement policies. But by God, Chuck, they've had an 8% increase in female. I mean, you listen to the moron reporter saying they're facing a crisis. It's a crisis. The crisis that we have not addressed this. No, the crisis is that the city is burning down around you. Because here's what I can tell you, and that people don't recognize sometimes, it's like fires like that, they burn so hot and so fast that they literally, they melt all of everything under the ground to a deep level. It will take... It's not like you just like, you know, plant some more grass and it grows, or plant another palm tree and it goes. The destruction is devastating, and it will take generations really to get things back. Right. And instead it's like, well, thank God, you know, we saved that extinct fish, right? Thank God, you know, we've solved our crisis of women firefighters facing some bullying in the fire station.
Yeah, that's been the problem.
They've addressed it. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And here's the thing, like Sandra says, what a bunch of BS. This is a kind of Democrat policies. This is what you get, right? Oh, Jacob's got his hand up. Hey, Jacob, go ahead.
Hi, real quickly. Last night, I play NPR in the garage so nobody breaks in. But anyway, so this lady, the anchor was asking this guest, I don't remember the name. He goes, are we over protecting the world from climate change? You know, because of the fires and everything. Oh, no, no, we're not doing enough. And I couldn't stop laughing. I said, your whole city's burning down.
Yeah. But Bernie Sanders is saying this is a result of climate change. It's like, no, it's not. No, it's not. And you're the problem. As long as you're blaming climate change and not the fact that there is no water in the fire hydrants, that's not climate change. That's a policy decision.
I think they need to do a long-term solution. Look yep. toward that. Forget about putting the fires out. Let's just move on to
just let it
sure
go.
We don't have any carbon.
Didn't Trump say that it was the underbrush that they're not clearing out often enough?
Right.
I think that's what it is.
That's what happens again in Colorado Springs, and it wasn't nearly as devastating, but that's always what happens because, again, the fire department or firefighters or fire experts call that the red zone. There is an area between like the suburbs, right? Uh-huh. And then you have the mountains and this middle area where people are building homes, and it's a fire red zone. And it's an extremely dangerous zone because that's where forest fires are natural. That's part of nature, right? They burn out the underbrush, the trees grow. New tree sprout, la, la, la. Yeah. And you can't fight that, right? But what you can do is manage it. So if you're going to build there, you've got to have the brush there. You've got to
you've got to make sure you don't have racist underbrush. That's been a long time problem up in L.A. And so they're going to have non-racist underbrush in which they'll treat equitably and fairly where all brush gets to be contribute and feel inclusive. They're going to solve the problem. There won't be any homes.
Well, she's in Ghana. I mean, and isn't it just Jacob? Doesn't it just? I mean, of course, the mayor's in Ghana, right?
Yeah.
The mayor, it's like, because why not go to the presidential inauguration in Ghana? You know, when your city's burning down.
I'll tell you, there's something equally funny, and that's that congestion price in New York. If you drive your car from 63rd Street down south, you got to pay $9.
Right. Well, and did you read that? Speaking of firefighters, and that's even if you're like turning the corner, right? I've been reading, they put this bizarre tax in New York. It's like $9 a day or something like that.
Yeah.
And the fire department in New York is complaining about it because they said sometimes due to staffing and things like that, they have to shift firefighters. So that they estimate that just, and it's, basically, you have to pay this tax. The theory is that it's going to make things less congested, so you won't take your car there. But even if you have to like turn the corner to get on the other one-way street, you get charged this $9, right?
Yes.
And they're talking about the fire department figures it's going to cost them $3,000 a day to get their fire people back and forth to fire stations.
But who cares? I mean, who cares for the fire
They
department?
Voted for it. They voted for it. We voted for Kate.
Okay, you got to pay $9. What they object to is that $9 will go someplace else other than their kitty. The government is not out money. It's government paying government. What they don't like is the fire department will be paying money into, and the money will go out to, no one knows who the money will go out to, but somebody else other than the fire department. So you really have governmental units squabbling and fighting against each other over the money they collect from themselves in one case, in this case.
Okay, one quick question. I gotta go. Whatever happened to that Seth Rich? Remember, he was the intern. I haven't heard a thing.
You know, the latest I heard on that. So Seth Rich was the guy that worked for the Hillary Clinton campaign, who was mysteriously murdered and never solved by the crack FBI. Right about the time the whole Russia hoax leaked. Uh-huh. And the last I heard, I think it was at Judicial Watch, somebody had the FBI had been ordered to turn stuff over, and they were like, "Oh, they don't have anything." And then they were fighting. That's another thing, Jacob. That's a great point. Something to watch when Trump takes over and Kash Patel. Yeah. That's a really good point.
Okay. All right. Bye bye.
Thank you. All right. Thank you. Let's see, from Sandra, the morons do the same thing in the mountains here in Colorado. Instead of having people clear out dead brush and trees, they stop them. Look at all the dead trees that are off of I-70. It happened in Lyons when that burned. And then Leo says, I would endorse any female firefighter that can put me over her shoulder and carry me down a flight of stairs in a fiery building. But that's probably only East German female swimmers from the 70s. So. But, you know, back to the Democrat policies here in Denver. And I know Chuck the Chronicle is working on stories on this. There was a story today that the number of restaurants is down 22% in Denver since 2021 in the past few years. And the restaurant owners are saying it's not that the problems that they face are sort of, again, Democrat policies. They have the homeless population that's sleeping in front of their things. They've got the crime that people don't want to go downtown. And then they've got the minimum wage, right, that they can't afford. They can't make a profit. They've got delivery fees. They have increasing costs. All of it, the result of Democrat policies. And restaurants, they're not going out of business. They're just leaving Denver. Right. And so, you know, we were talking, right. And it doesn't sound like, well, so what's there fewer restaurants, but that's whole part of what makes a vibrant city. Right.
Yeah. Well, it's a wonderful deal because, you know, one time before Denver became truly progressive, they did kind of care about their local businesses. I mean, Hickenlooper was a restaurateur. That's right. What he did. But ever since then, it's been, you know, who cares? And so they, you know, all the restaurants are closing. You think Mike Johnson cares?
No,
he doesn't care. He said, well, how does that affect our newcomers?
Right.
you know, so they don't care. And so these poor restaurateurs go down to City Hall to talk about something, you know, they find a treason, and they get the same response. It's different words, but Look, sir, we have to tell you, you got to get this correctly. I mean, you've argued some very articulate points, but simply you must understand, we don't care.
Yeah.
We simply don't care.
And here's the thing, and not only that, they don't just hurt the restaurant. So they pass these ridiculous minimum wages that small businesses can't afford. So do the small businesses say, well, okay, we'll pay our employees this? No, they close. So now rather than having, you know, 20 employees making a little bit less than this outrageous minimum wage, now they have zero employees making, you know, all of the employees basically.
Yeah, but lucky for the employees, because now they'll be homeless. They'll start caring about them again. They hit the homeless glass, and then the progressive government cares.
Yeah, that's true. It's who would have thought we would long for the days of Michael Hancock? You know, would say at least the city was well run when the developers controlled it. Now that the progressives control it, it's a hellhole, really. You know.
Well, but I love the idea of sitting up as on the way into Denver, we're not sure which way. Probably they'd come in from the east. There'd be a long, thin blue line of patriotic police officers to stop them.
To stop ICE.
Stop ICE.
Well, here's the thing that ICE better do now is that
since all of the DEI hires there, they're not a very tough group. So bucking them up behind will be the Valkyries. from the Highlands area. And they're
Highlands.
Apparently a particularly vicious group
of moms. Well, here's the thing. Hopefully the ICE agents better eat before they get to Denver, because there aren't going to be any restaurants.
No restaurants there.
No restaurants in Denver. So, hey, listen, that is going to wrap it up for us. We want to thank everybody on Zoom and Doug there at BBS, Cheryl Trumley. On Friday, you're going to want to tune in. We'll have John Eastman. I'm talking
That'll
about.
Be great to see, talk to John again and get the update from him. That'll be tremendous.
That's right. So
All right, everybody. Thank you. And we'll see you Friday.